Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. Hi, welcome to Affair Recovery Radio tonight, and this is Rick, and I'm here with my lovely bride of 30 years, Stephanie. And I did get that right, 30 years?
Yes.
Okay, right. Good, I got it right. And tonight, we're going to be talking about the bad advice blog that we've had on the website. We meant to do this actually weeks earlier, about 3 weeks earlier, but during our transition, we actually lost the bad advice, and then once we found the bad advice, we lost the names to the bad advice, and now we've gotten the names reassociated with the bad advice, so we can actually announce our winners in an email tomorrow in terms of the five people that get a free subscription for a year, as well as getting to have one free course during the next year. So we're really excited about that. And Steffi and I thought it'd be a lot of fun to be able to go through some of the bad advice people have gotten. Our goal at the Affair Recovery Center, obviously, is to avoid giving bad advice. And
but you really think we'll be able to figure out the top five by in the morning?
Yeah, we'll be able to figure out the top five by in the morning.
Wow.
So Stephanie's really surprised that we'll be able to figure out the top five by in the morning, but I need to get the email out.
There's just a lot of bad advice out there.
There is a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of bad advice out there. And for comic relief tonight, we have our producer, George, who may jump in and say, now that is some seriously bad advice. He will let us know that. George, if you see one of the things that we read that's definitely a winner, you can sit there and say, now that's a winner. You know, he definitely, whoever that is, they deserve a free subscription. And the reason we're giving the free subscription, of course, is that after that much bad advice and the pain and the suffering you've had to go through as a result of craziness that people have told you, we think at least the least we can do is to give you something as a gift for enduring what all you had to go through. And
yes.
Certainly, we want to help with your healing.
Yes.
And so I think we'll just kind of jump off into this thing. And we're just going to be going down in the order kind of as things were posted. And we may actually try to give some good advice with the bad advice. Maybe we'll make some comments. I don't know. But again, so this is the first one. And it was just my own mother calmly suggested, honey, you're getting older. Why can't you just lose a bit of weight? Look the other way and take what your hubby has to offer when he's there. She says, thank God, or he says, thank God. Well, I guess that would have to be a woman.
She.
She's a she. Thank God I'm strong enough to say the truth because I deserve more out of life than that. You know, and I cannot believe how many times people come in and they are told, the hurt spouse is actually told it's their problem, they need to lose some weight, crazy.
I think it's interesting that this is the mother who tells her daughter that you just need to take the crumbs that he has to offer you. I think about my mother who is no longer living, and I think that sometimes that generation kind of had that, they had that mindset about things. They just sort of lived in a world of denial.
Either that or pretend normal, as we say. Well, but yeah, but that's sad for her.
Oh, it's, and I appreciate and I admire that woman that she could say, I deserve more out of life.
So what advice would you give one of our daughters if one of their mates cheated on them just to lose some weight?
Well, Our daughters don't need to lose weight.
Okay, but even if they did, what would you suggest that they need to do?
Talk to their father.
Oh, great day in the morning. Okay, so we have an unfair advantage. They would talk to me, and I would, no telling what I might say at that point. Anything else you would say besides talk to their dad?
Well, I'd absolutely tell them, you know, to talk to their husband. I'm thinking about last week when we talked about that, you know, don't tell if there's an affair thing that we talked about with Mira Kirshenbaum in her book. And I think if one of our daughters came to me and told me that they were having an affair, I would definitely counsel them to go to their husband. But if they came to me and said that their husband, they suspected that their husband was having an affair, I would talk to them about communication. And I'm sure I would draw you into it because they would need some emotional support there.
Speaking of which, if anybody that's listening out there today wants to, or tonight, wants to be able to comment about some of these things, you can actually call us here at 637-9673, 637-9673, at the word, that's area code 512-637-9673. You can also, if you just want to make a comment, email me at rick@hope-now.com. So area code 512-637-9673, and you can cast your vote if you go, now that's some bad advice or whatever.
Well, the other thing is, if someone is listening and they have been given this particular advice, call and let us know what your response was. I would be interested in that. Not telling us that you wrote it, of course, but some of this advice, I'm sure there have been a lot of people that got it. So if we talk about some advice that is the same as advice that you got, please call us and tell us how you dealt with that, because I would be very interested in knowing what your response was.
Rick, can I jump in on with a common man's unlearned, you know, perspective?
Absolutely. Absolutely,
well,
George.
Not knowing anything about counseling or psychology, I mean, anybody to say that to their spouse, you know, I had to have the affair because you need to lose weight is a pig, of course. But the other side of that is, you know, it is practical advice. I mean, if your spouse is not turning you on, you know, something's got to be done. Either you've got to have a lobotomy or something, and so that you get to the point where you don't notice anymore, or the other spouse has to make themselves more attractive. Now, in my case, it's me that needs to work, and my wife does remind me that I need to get some exercise and, you know, do some push-ups away from the table every once in a while.
Let me ask you a question, George. Did you need your wife to tell you that, or were you already aware?
Oh, I'm quite aware.
Okay. As I was going to say, and most, I would say, I don't know what the statistic would be, but let's say 97% of the time when a person tells their spouse that, the spouse they're telling already knows that.
Yeah, but if they don't change and you're not turned on by them, what are you supposed to do? What is the answer to that?
Well, actually, I think that there has to be an honest discussion. I've actually had couples have that discussion in my office, not in a way that's critical, but in a way that's very, very constructive. And they've actually talked about solutions to that particular problem, because indeed couples, and this is not politically correct, but one mate or the other can actually gain enough weight where they kind of get outside of their mate's arousal template, so to speak, and they no longer find their mate attractive. But for a mother to say that's the solution to an affair is still pretty crazy. And for your mother to say, look the other way and just take what he has to offer is even more nuts.
Well, since you mentioned that, Rick, how did that go when you've had couples that communicated like that with you about sensitive issues like that? Did that work pretty good?
Yeah, well, we've actually done it under the auspices when we're dealing with sex therapy and you know, what is causing some of the sexual dysfunction. And it, again, it's not that they don't love their mate in those circumstances, but they may not be physically attracted to their mate anymore. And so it's a sad situation. In the cases I've worked with, actually, many of the mates, both men and women, who have gained a lot of weight have certainly not felt insulted. They can understand that. And some of them have actually, not in a sense of feeling like they're being controlled by their mate, but just out of compassion for their mate, have actually begun to work at trying to lose some weight. And then other times what we've done is worked on how do they work around it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've worked that direction also.
That's interesting.
Second piece of bad advice, He told you why he did it. Now let it go. I wish I knew who had given that advice. But certainly I have heard people who have had that one.
Usually that's what the unfaithful spouse says. I let you know why. Now get over it.
Now, here's one that I find. I'm skipping through some of these, so if there's a little bit of quiet. She says, the worst advice that I received so far was actually from a marriage counselor. I just want to apologize for marriage counselors here as we begin the program, because some of the things I've heard marriage counselors say horrify me.
Or that we've read.
Right. And it's real interesting. Peggy Vaughn's work shows in her research that typically for couples going in for help with infidelity, they will, during the first session, talk about the infidelity. And then from the second session on, what they deal with is something like communication or weight loss or sexual dysfunction or something like that. And that happens in over 70% of visits to marriage therapists, which just says that the marriage therapy field has done a horrible job at training therapists in how to begin to treat this thing. So,
well,
anyway.
I have had friends who have gone to see therapists for infidelity, and they have talked to me later and said, I don't know how to get the therapist to talk about the affair.
Right, because the therapist doesn't know what to say about the affair, and that's the problem.
Right.
So, you want to read this one?
Yes. The worst advice I've received so far was actually from a marriage counselor. My husband and I had been meeting with her for about 6 months. I had just had an anger-filled tirade at him the previous week regarding his infidelity, and we told the counselor about it. She said that I shouldn't still be angry with him, and that I should consult a psychiatrist because I may have a bipolar disorder. Needless to say, I am not bipolar, and I was just having a setback, according to our new counselor, and our communications are getting more productive and, surprisingly, more loving. I only found out about his infidelity in October 2007.
Right. And what I think most therapists don't realize is that it really does take oftentimes as long as 18 to 24 months for that anger to begin to subside. Not that the marriage doesn't get much better, but there's certainly times that the hurt spouse has a setback and will go through things. So you bet. Saying that she's bipolar because she got mad because her husband cheated on her, I would actually say she's amazingly healthy for getting hacked as a result of what her husband did. So here's one that I thought was interesting. I was actually told in the middle of a complete and total mental breakdown that if I just got off the couch and did the chicken dance, I'd feel better. No joke. This advice, of course, came from my husband, who had cheated on me and caused me the complete and total mental breakdown. Now, that is not uncommon advice, not even just from the husband, that people say, well, that just get over it, get up, start doing things, you'll begin to feel better. And the bottom line is infidelity is like a pain like no other, and it's crazy to think the chicken dance, maybe if done fast enough. No, the chicken dance would somehow help. Stephanie's doing the chicken dance in here. I'm sorry y'all can't see it.
Ah, radio's wonderful.
Radio is pretty. She's pretty good at it, though. Did it make you feel better when you just did it?
You know, I got a little car sick getting here, and that did not help.
So we don't advise the chicken dance at the Affair Recovery Center. We think that that's probably bad advice. We can certainly check that off as that's dumb. Next. Do you want to read this one, hon?
Okay. My husband violated our relationship with an infidelity 5 months ago. We are still very much so struggling, even living together. We've been separated since I have found out. I'm sure you'll have many other entries with worse advice than I've gotten, but here goes. After only 3 days after finding out, I was speaking to a close friend of mine about it, and she just very bluntly told me to leave him. I'm sure she had the very best of intentions, but boy, how harsh she was blew me away. She even used the old saying, once a cheater, always a cheater. How easy it is for other people to tell you what you should do when I've committed my life to this man for the past 15 years. I was just blown away by her advice. Of course, I haven't left him as of yet. it's looking more and more that may be the case. Things between us just aren't improving, and I don't know what to do to improve our relationship. We're in counseling and have been for several months. During our last session, I felt our therapist annoyed with our relationship and things not going anywhere. She even used the term, poop or get off the pot, that either we are going to make it work or we need to call it quits. How awful I felt after that session as well. I love my husband. I know that he loves me and is regretful of what he did, but we just can't seem to move in the right direction. Any good advice is very welcome if you have it.
You know, I think the problem that someone like this individual has in some ways really is the therapist giving the bad advice. I mean, my thought would be there's a really good chance that therapist has no clue in terms of what to do to help this couple. And there really is a process that couples have to go through. Steffi and I just spent 3 days actually with a couple that had come in from Georgia for an intensive. And in an individual intensive, it's even a little bit different than one of the EMSs. Maybe she called those ICUs, you know?
Oh, that's what she called it.
She called it an ICU. Mm-hmm.
She said, this has been ICU for the weekend.
Well, it's definitely intense. And in that type of work, one of their problems, I think, has been his inability to hear. And their therapist, I think, has had a lot of trouble kind of breaking through, helping him to get it. And she certainly has not felt that her husband's been able to understand. And thankfully, they made a tremendous amount of progress this weekend and actually were hugging on their way out and were excited about their future and getting back to Georgia. But it is really hard when you have a therapist that doesn't know what to tell you.
You know, I'm confused about something, Rick. When a couple loses a child to an illness and the child passes away, there are groups, support groups that they follow up with, that they meet with, that they work on processing to deal with and come to terms with what's happened. And when your spouse has an affair, that is a death. It is a death of a vision. It's a death of a dream. It's a death on so many different levels. And so there's a lot of grieving that takes place. And it puzzles me as to why there are counselors and therapists out there who don't understand that that has to be processed just like any other grief. And why they won't let them talk about it. We'll get to one later that they could, their therapist would only allow them to talk about it 30 minutes a week. And I just don't understand how that cannot, I mean, that's, to me, that's just nearly common sense that you have all these other processing groups to work through grief. And this is grief of the ultimate. I'm just really confused about that.
Well, I think the problem is most therapists are uncomfortable with literally the level of tension that happens as couples begin to process. And the other thing I think that happens, they don't see it as grief. They just see it as kind of repair it. They know with a couple to deal with communication. They don't even know how to grieve the loss of something like that. They don't see it as a loss. They just see it as a betrayal. And until they can begin to see it as grief and see it as trauma, then I think you're going to continue to get a lot of really bad advice. And nor do they know how to help the unfaithful spouse really understand what happened. And I think that's been the problem with this couple from Georgia. The unfaithful spouse really was having trouble comprehending how what he did was really all that bad. Because in his mind, in his little denial system, the problem was all he had done was emails and shared a lot of private details about their marriage and shared his heart, but they'd never really had sex.
But that goes back to infidelity is the keeping of secrets, and he was keeping this a secret from his wife.
Right, but he just wasn't able to perceive that as nearly as bad. when in reality the betrayal sharing so much information about their marriage had probably been far more devastating to her than if he had been with prostitutes.
Oh, that's what she said. You know, I think that that's where that you have a level of compassion and empathy that someone who hasn't walked through that, a therapist who hasn't walked through that, just can never have.
Yeah, it was interesting. One of the analysis or comparative analysis I did this weekend was we had a couple years ago who actually he took pictures of his wife and posted them on the internet. She had no idea he had taken nude pictures of her and posted them on the internet. And I mean, obviously, she felt amazingly violated as a result of that. And by the way, they worked that out and they have a great marriage today. But she felt really violated by that. And I think to this woman, there was every bit as much violation as a result of his sharing just in written format that detail of intimacy as this other woman who actually had the pictures posted. And I think a lot of times marriage therapists don't really see that. And, you know, they may even agree with the unfaithful spouse that really, what's the big deal here?
But it's a huge betrayal.
It was a huge betrayal. And the fact is, she really needed him to understand before she could feel safe enough to begin to reconnect with him. And thankfully.
Yes, because until he understood, why would she want to be vulnerable again and run the risk? Because if he didn't understand that betrayal, then it would happen again.
Right. And some of us guys, and even some women, but some of us guys tend to be amazingly relationally retarded and a little bit slow at being able to get it. And so I think they began to get it at that point.
I was sitting here on the sidelines and listening, and I'm thinking about the Bible passage where back in the Old Testament where if you harm an unborn child, you have to do so much penance or pay such a big penalty. I guess you actually lose your life in that case, but there's a bunch of different penalties. And I'm thinking, you know, there ought to be a penalty for cheating on your spouse. I know Jesus says forgive them 70 times 70, but it'd be just a whole lot nicer if you could just take a, you know, one of their limbs off or something.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I think revenge is called for. It's something that's natural that needs to be there.
If your eye offends you, pluck it out.
Yeah, and if your spouse offends you with something crazy like an affair,
take him out.
That, you know, there's a real big temptation to want to do that.
And except God says vengeance is mine.
I know, but that's the anger has to be dealt with, and to say you can't talk about it.
Yeah.
But I can see the wisdom in that, too, because the hurt spouse would do nothing but talk about it.
Well, not really. I think that – you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I will say. in the beginning, yes, you talk about it and you talk about it until you feel like you're understood. Until you feel, you know, I would talk about it and talk about it until Rick gave me enough clues that I knew he understood how I felt. And then when he understood how I felt and when he understood how deep the hurt was, then I could reach a level of satisfaction in knowing that he understands, you know, so we can start to move past it. But until I believed that he really knew how upset and how hurt and how devastated, betrayed, you know, I felt, I did keep talking about it because I kept thinking, well, maybe if I rephrase it, he will better understand. Maybe if I use a little bit stronger language, you know, he'll better understand. And so I see that in women, you know, because usually I'm dealing with the women. And I see that in women that they do. They just keep hammering and hammering. But the reason they keep doing it is because they're not getting any feedback from their spouse that they have gotten it yet. And they're not seeing any repentance. They're not seeing any brokenness, you know. So
That would be as much as punishment as taking off
yes,
a limb.
Yes, I think so.
Well, one of the things Stephanie used to say to me, one of my favorites, she'd say, well, exactly how loud am I going to have to get before you hear me here?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I was going to say when you're talking about that there should be some kind of price that they pay or something, the consequences of sin sometimes are huge, you know, and they sometimes go on and on. And so, you know, we see couples that they may lose their job, they may lose their business, you know, they lose friends, they may have to leave their church. I mean, sometimes it's a price that they might rather have lost a finger.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah, you know, but I, as a happily married man, I mean, every once in a while, your mind drifts, and it's the old man nature, I guess you would say, or you know, the devil made me think it, or whatever. But in that instant that I allow myself to have sinful thoughts, I mean, that is a betrayal of my spouse. You know, it's an affair of the mind for a few seconds, and I feel guilty, but I suffer from it to this day. You know, it's a human thing.
You don't stay there, though, do you, George?
No, but you know, I'm guilty of it, and you know, there's you know, you see somebody and you think, what would that you know, knowing that person and having a relationship, I mean, even as a friendship. Mm-hmm. I feel so guilty because I've actually had those kind of thoughts recent times, and I'm very happily married, and my wife just couldn't be better. But I'm just a pig. I'm a sinner, as a Christian even, and I actually did have to pray, and I do need to continue to pray because it's an ever present danger that we're in this world full of temptations.
You know, I will tell you something, George, that was really helpful for me when our situation was that after, you know, I knew about the affair and we had even started working through it and everything, Rick would come home at the end of the day and he would go over with me the temptations that he had had during the day. And as painful as that was, I was so grateful that he was willing to be transparent, because that helped me regain my trust in him, because I knew that he was willing to do whatever it took to work on our marriage and to regain my trust. And he was willing to do that, even though he knew that it was painful for me. He knew that as a couple it was good for us. So,
and I would think there'd be a lot of couples where the betrayed spouse would want to go ahead and reciprocate as punishment, perhaps.
Right. And that's that actually is, there are certain individuals that really seems to be the solution, that a rebound affair is going to solve the problem. And those are probably the saddest of all to me, because of the damage they do to themselves. And it just breaks my heart that people in their own pain do something that just causes more pain. That would be sad. So here's another one. Here's my entry for the worst advice. Our marriage counselor, and I used the term loosely, when hearing that I was going to accompany my husband to Las Vegas on a business trip, gave me this advice. She told me she had recently gotten back from a trip there and said we had to go to a certain show that would do us a world of good. It was a...
Cirque du Soleil.
Honey. I don't know what to say. And they thought, why not? We should have done more research. It was offensive and X-rated and made me very uncomfortable. And as if the Lord was telling us that that wasn't the right way to go, two of the acrobats took a horrific fall from 50 feet in the air, almost killing both of them. The show was stopped. The lights came on. Rescue workers raced in, and people in the audience were passing out and throwing up. I need advice like that, like I need a hole in my head. Sadly, this was a counselor our pastor recommended. Like you say so often, Rick, unless you've gone through it, you have no idea. And I think that's, you know, again, first off, it's sad that the pastor didn't have someone better to ultimately refer them to. And second off, that the counselor would be so insensitive when you're dealing with betrayal to send somebody to an X-rated show in Las Vegas. I don't even know what to say about that. That was bad. Do you think you want to add to that one, Stephanie?
Bad.
Okay, we definitely agree with that one's bad.
Where's the rabbi one?
We'll get there in a minute. You want to read this one?
This comment was from a college psychology professor who was also a close friend just a few weeks after my divorce from a 30-year marriage. I have worked with a lot of divorced people, and you, by far, are taking it harder than anyone else I know. This comment was from a close friend right after the adultery was uncovered. I know he committed adultery numerous times, but it isn't all his fault. There are always two sides to every divorce. This comment was from a good friend. You need to do what a friend told my mom after she found out my dad had a short affair. Her sister-in-law, husband's sister, gave her a metal fence post about 6 foot long and a sledgehammer and told her to hammer it into the ground until it disappeared into the dirt and then forget about it and not go out and dig it up again. It was over. Leave it buried.
I'll tell you what. Driving a 6 foot fence post into the ground and thinking that somehow that's going to solve the horrific pain caused by divorce has got to be the dumbest thing that, I mean, that's even, I don't know, that's pretty dumb.
Some people feel compelled to give advice when maybe it would just be better to say, man, I'm really sorry. I'll be praying for you.
Right. You want to read this one?
My husband and I were really struggling in our marriage from my husband's addiction to pornography, which eventually led to an affair. We went to see a, quote, Christian marriage counselor who told my husband it would be okay to look at Victoria's Secret catalogs. He went on to fully describe his own experience at a strip club. After trying several counselors, we discovered how many quacks are out there. The worst advice that I got was to immediately divorce my husband and take care of myself. Because people want a quick fix these days, that seemed to be everyone's advice to me. There's a fine line between becoming a martyr and making sure you have given the marriage your all. I felt that if I gave up without first giving my best, I was doing myself, my children, and my descendants a huge disservice. You can't control another human being, no matter what method you use, but God can do miracles. I tried to make sure I prayed over my husband throughout the day and that I was listening for God's direction in my life. This was in the midst of incredible emotional pain when I didn't even like my husband. But I couldn't change the fact that he was my husband or would be my ex-husband if I chose that. I couldn't change the fact that he was the father of my children. He would always have access into my life through our children. So getting a divorce is not the easy solution that some believe. Fortunately, my husband listened to God and turned his life around. I know that I have no guarantee for a perfect life, but am looking to God every day for my answers. No matter what my husband chooses, God has a plan for my life.
And I'll tell you, this is actually one of the most common pieces of advice, that you just need to get a divorce. That whole thing that someone said earlier, once a cheater, always a cheater, that the simplest solution is just to move on. And I'll tell you, and you'll hear me say this over and over again on the program here, that I do not understand why our culture is so much more tolerant, actually, of divorce, where people are literally destroyed, devastated, standard of living is absolutely cut in half, children are devastated. We're more tolerant of divorce than we are of unfaithfulness. And I will acknowledge unfaithfulness creates an incredible pain. But sometimes good people do make, as Mira would say, bad mistakes. I mean, they follow sin. At the same time, to think that a marriage cannot be restored and to think that a marriage cannot, that God isn't able to do a miracle and create something better than ever once was is nuts. Not that you stay in a bad situation at all cost where someone's not safe. We've talked about that in other programs, but still, it's just hard to get it. You know, why people think that's the solution.
George, have you busied out all the lines in there? Have you busied out all the lines in there? No, I can't believe nobody's called.
This is pretty juicy stuff.
Yeah, I thought somebody would call and tell us maybe about their bad advice or that they could identify with some of this bad advice. What number do they need to call, Rick?
They would need to call 637-9673, area code 512-637-9673, and they could then talk to Stephanie and they could weigh in. Brian, if you're listening, then feel free to comment, because Brian said he listens, right, on Sunday nights?
Yeah, he said he listens sometimes.
So, Brian, 637-9673 if you're out there listening.
Well, you guys do this for a living, and to talk about these kind of things are just commonplace for you, but I think this area of sexuality and marital problems and betrayal might be some of the toughest things that a person can possibly think of to talk about in public.
Yeah.
You know, so... it's very, you know, it takes a lot of courage, I think, to come forward. And I don't know why in the world I'm doing it. I just don't know any better. But
well, I think the other thing tonight, especially with the Bad Advice blog, you don't have to have been unfaithful to call into this program.
That's
can
right.
You could just be a normal person like Brian that's calling in. I know you're going to call Brian. That this calls in and has fun.
And the anonymity of the radio.
Absolutely.
Know? I mean, we're just sitting here in our robes, you know, drinking a cup of coffee, smoking a cigarette, you know, so.
You're going to get me in so much trouble, Gene. Okay. Here's one. During the time when I was really hurting for my husband's affair, I was given what was absolutely the worst advice ever. It was about 5 to 6 months after I'd found out about his affair, which just happened to be a 10-year affair with my best friend, and I was in a moderate clinical depression, you think? My husband had just told the counselor that he was really down because I was so negative all the time. He acknowledged that my normal personality wasn't negative at all. It was just since I had found out about the affair that I was negative. The counselor told me, turned to me and told me that I needed to be very sensitive to his feelings and, in fact, be nurturing to him. She also recommended that we only talk about the affair once a week for 30 minutes. Obviously, she had never personally had to deal with anything of the magnitude that we were going through. My husband has since done a complete about-face and totally acknowledged that what he did, the affair, was wrong. And at the time this advice was given, he was still in a lot of denial, and we hadn't realized the truth of what he had done. If we had followed this advice, we would never be able to get into a place of restoration.
You know, she doesn't say that they went to a different counselor, but I'm thinking surely they did.
I hope they did. It's just kind of sad to me that people, again, get that sort of crazy advice. And, man, that's amazing to me that she needs to get over it so her husband can get better. In reality, if I run into your car and just whack your car, then, you know, the person who did the car whacking, it's kind of their responsibility to try to take care of make things better for the person that just got the car damaged. And, I mean, this is like just common sense. It just doesn't make sense to me that people would say these sorts of things. So that would be kind of crazy. For sure. Oh, okay. Kathy from Oregon. It didn't come through. Kathy, are you there?
I am.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Kathy.
Hey, good. Hi, Stephanie. Gosh, it's really good to hear you on.
Thank you. I'm glad you called.
Well, you guys have some interesting bad advice.
have you got something to share with us tonight?
My goodness, I've had a lot of bad advice.
Really?
You know, the one I think that hurts the most probably was my best friend of 27 years.
No.
Yeah, she called me and told me that she would support me no matter what my decision would be.
Yeah.
But then she told me probably 3 or 4 weeks later that she would support me, but if I stayed with my husband, that we probably couldn't be friends.
Oh, really? So she put conditions on that support, huh?
I guess.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So anyway, I ended the friendship.
Wow.
To me, that just wasn't support.
I think that put her outside of the best friend category, don't you?
Don't you? Yes.
Yeah, I do.
I don't think there's, you know, and there's another thing, too, I'd like to say on that is, I don't know about you, Stephanie, but I know with me, something I really learned through all this is the word trust, because so many people would say to me, gosh, you're never going to be able to trust him again.
And what'd you say, Kathy?
Well, you know, I finally had to realize that it's not about trust, because even people that you love, they're going to hurt you. They're going to hurt you one way or another. So it's about safety.
Mm-hmm.
It's about when they do hurt you or they do betray you, is it a safe betrayal?
Yeah.
Are they doing it because they're out to hurt you, to spread gossip about you, or are they doing it because they're trying to help you? And so when I look at my husband now, and I don't so much go to, can I trust him? I go more to, is he safe for me now?
Yeah. You know, that's really very, that is just a great way to look at it, Kathy, because that gives you a lot of You know, because one of the biggest questions that I get is, when can you trust them again? And I know a lot of times I hear Rick say, what can they do so you'll feel safe with them? And that's exactly right. What you're talking about.
Right. Because, you know, I've learned this through going through all this, even with my kids, my parents, my friends, people in general. And the trust word comes up, and I go, wow, but yet you've hurt me. You've done this, and you've done that, and you've done things, and so should I not trust you? Well, mm-hmm. Trust, I don't even think sometimes we can trust ourselves, mm-hmm. because we get these instincts that we don't follow through on. You know, mm-hmm. and because for some reason we talk ourselves out of it, so we end up not trusting what we're telling ourselves.
Yeah.
So I had to switch to Rick and talk about the safety issue. Is it safe? Are you safe now? Are you a place for me to share and know that what I'm sharing with you is going to stay sacred and safe with you? And so I don't really know that, to me, all this bad advice I've gotten on trust is even an issue. It's more about safety.
Thank you, Kathy. That is so neat.
Kathy, I want to ask you, have you and your husband reconciled?
Well, you know, it's been almost 2 years. Rick, you know, you've been with us from the beginning. reconciled totally. I wouldn't know that we would reconcile totally. We're still going through the rubble sometimes. I mm-hmm. still have those issues of going through the rubble because the betrayal started really, really, really early in our marriage.
Mm.
And so there's a lot of wreckage for me to clean up.
That's hard.
And yeah, and that's the other thing, too. And I don't know how you did this, but I try to forgive one big whop forgive. And I have finally learned there is no one big whop of forgiveness. It is. There's so much that
yeah.
and you have to kind of go through each individual one and forgive each individual instance, each individual lie, each individual betrayal. It's huge.
Yeah.
And people don't understand. And a part of that too is I think, like, you guys are talking about counselors. I don't think unless you've been there, it's like the death of a child, like you were talking about.
Yes.
And you
yeah.
hear people say, you know, I know how you feel. Well, no, you don't.
Uh-huh.
You don't know how they feel unless you've lost a child.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the same thing is said with betrayal.
Absolutely.
You don't know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How long, Stephanie, did it take you? Are you processed?
Wow.
2 years? 4 years?
Oh, Kathy. You know, amazingly, I would say a couple of years. But, you know, our situation, I hate to say this, but Rick was so broken. He was absolutely devastated when he told me. And it didn't take someone beating him over the head to make him feel responsible and to make him own up to it. He just, maybe because of his, you know, his education of training to be a therapist, but he was just a broken, repentant person. From the beginning, when he first came to me, and
so Rick came and told you,
yes,
you didn't discover,
right, and you know that made it. I mean, but you know, Kathy, I don't know if you saw us on the TV program last week, but I already had.
What TV program are you guys on?
Oh, we were just on for one little program, the Mike and Juliet program morning show.
I watched that show and I missed.
Oh,
that
do
one.
You? Oh, I'm sorry, you did. But there were some red flags to me because she was my best friend. I had already seen that, you know, something was just not right. I saw some peculiar behaviors between them. It was a little flirty even in my presence, which I thought was amazing. And so it was just one of those things that I was feeling very uncomfortable about. And I knew something was out of line there. And I'd ask Rick if he had a crush on her. And, you know, being the good, unfaithful spouse he was, he lied to me. So, you know, so I already kind of had an idea. But he did. He came and he told me. I think he was so miserable, and he just wasn't able to keep the deceit going.
Well, the guilt got to him.
Yeah,
it
did.
And see, that's the one thing, like with my husband, he told me that he never felt guilt or shame throughout the whole time, that he just deserved it, and
yeah,
that was just the way it was. And so I discovered it. I had gut feelings you know, for 18 mm-hmm. years. I had gut feelings, and
wow.
I asked him, you know, and sure, I tried to investigate a little bit, but I didn't. I guess I kept telling myself I was just being crazy, and, you know, if you're married to somebody, you need to trust them, and
yeah.
you need to respect them,
right.
honor them. Those are the commitments you make when you, you know,
right.
give your vows. So I just overrode those stomach, you know, those stomach knots and aches, and then when I discovered it, it took about 6 months for him to finally admit he had a problem.
Yeah.
But he's worked really hard on changing his life. But me, I've had to change my life so much, you know, as far as the friends, family,
yes.
you know,
oh,
things
yeah.
like that,
oh,
that
yeah.
have come along through all this. But sometimes I just go, it's unfair. And, George, you made a comment about revenge. And that's one thing I guess I really haven't felt. I haven't really felt like I want to take revenge on him.
I never felt like that either.
Mm-mm. I haven't felt that because I just know that God's revenge is so much greater than
oh,
anything
yeah.
I could ever do.
Absolutely.
That, you know, and I just pray that his life is right with God, because I would hate to even think about the revenges that God can do.
Yeah.
So revenge never crossed my mind.
Yeah.
So,
Kathy, I am so glad you called. This is great.
A lot of bad advice.
Do you listen to us all the time?
I do. Yeah, we're regulars.
Well,
we took a 911, and I've been waiting for you to get on.
Oh, have you? Well, I hope I'm doing okay.
You're doing great. But thanks, you guys.
You're welcome. Listen, call us again sometime, okay?
I will do that.
Okay, God bless, Kathy.
You too. Bye, Rick.
Bye-bye.
Hey, bye-bye. Here's another one. After my husband had multiple extra-affair sexual encounters and spent more than $22,000 at strip clubs, a friend of mine suggested I wait until his BMW convertible, the other half of his midlife crisis, was in the garage, take a pickaxe to it, burn the house down, max out the credit cards, and walk away and forget he ever existed. That's some interesting advice. This one I thought was funny, though. Her other suggestion was to put a thong on the Thanksgiving turkey prior to serving it to my husband. The only thing I would say is it really depends on, was the guy repentant, was he broken or not? He may not have needed the pickaxe to the BMW and the credit card thing. And the problem with any of those really angry responses is the fact that it cost you also a great deal. And it would even, you know, cost you a thong if you put it on the Thanksgiving turkey. So.
Oh, you're good, honey.
Thank you. Well, I don't know how much one of those cost. It might be expensive. Oh, here's one. You want to read this next one here?
My mother told me that a pastor once told her, and this is a quote, "All men go through this at some point in their life. You should just wait for them to get it out of their system."
Well, you know, you should have been that kind to me.
You think so?
Yeah, the only problem is probably I would not, if it had not been addressed, would still be doing it to this day.
I was going to say, and yes, and how long would it take a man to get it out of their system?
Let's see. As long as you can get away with it.
Okay, here's one.
Yeah.
Do you want to do this one?
Yeah, no, you do this one. This is one of my favorites.
Okay, yeah, this is a good one.
This one I know is a winner.
The unfaithful spouses get bad advice during the recovery process, too. I was referred to a, quote, Christian psychiatrist by my, quote, Christian counselor. This psychiatrist told me that my husband needs to stop talking about my affairs and that he is an abuser and that I should leave him. He said, "Your marriage sounds like one of the worst cases in my 30 years of counseling couples. I don't see much hope here. Your husband hasn't truly forgiven you if he continues to talk about it." This man had not even met my husband. I was doing counseling in an effort to change myself and my own bad behaviors, yet these counselors told me to leave him because of his angry reactions to my infidelity. Then he told me I am probably bipolar, that seems to be popular, and ADD, and prescribed me two medications for it as if my infidelity were some result of mental illness instead of sin. I stopped counseling altogether after the original counselor reported me to social services. She did so without notifying me. I had sent her an email detailing the depths of my depression resulting from the fallout of my own adultery and how shamed and horrible I felt, etc., and she concluded that because of my emotional state, I was incapable of properly caring for my children. So, she forwarded my email on to social services despite absolutely no evidence that my children were being neglected in any way. How in the world could social services help my husband and me heal our marriage? Give me a break. I've also had some really bad advice from well-meaning friends. I was pretty open with a few girlfriends after my adultery was revealed and just wanted to talk and process what we were going through. I had one girlfriend send me a book, I forget the name, about misogynists, and told me point blank that because of my husband's reaction to my betrayal, that he was a woman hater and abuser, and that basically I should leave him. Man, this girl just can't, she can't win for losing, I tell you.
That's right. I mean, this is ding, 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 ding. It's certainly one of the five.
Social services, her kids. That's an unethical thing on that counselor's part.
No, it's not unethical, but it's dumb. And the reality is with someone like this, I mean, obviously, if children are at risk, counselors do have to report to social services. That is an ethical requirement. It's a legal requirement, actually, not just ethical.
That's true.
Now, the call of whether or not her kids were at risk because she said she was down as a result of all of these things, I mean, certainly I would have talked to them first and not ever done that sort of thing without first consulting them and making sure that they're at risk.
Seemed a little premature.
Oh, it just seems a little chicken to do it and not talk to them first. I mean, how much time does it take to pick up a telephone out of concern for someone and see how in the world they're doing? And you've got to, you know, certainly unfaithful spouses get terrible advice. I mean, that was the reason we did the whole last program. For everybody that's read Mira's book, we would certainly say that they got bad advice in a sense of not telling. I mean,
right.
Healing comes from intimacy. It does not come from hiding out there.
The truth will set you free. I have one I want to make sure we get to read before the night's over.
Well, George had a comment he wanted to make, though, I think.
Oh, well, I was just going to say the Bible says to confess your sins to one another, and I think that's probably one of the things that it tells us to do that very few people practice.
Right. And it's, you know what, God really is able to reconcile and work these things out. And like we say, why do you want to control your mate by the flow of information? Let's just get it out there and let God begin to do his own redemptive work and just take responsibility. That really goes a long way. You goof, do something.
Well, I kept thinking, too, all week I've thought about things that I wish I had said when we talked to Mira, and one of them was that the truth will set you free, which is scripture. But you know what? That has just as much application for non-Christians. Lies keep you in bondage, and the truth will set you free from that.
I think in Christianity you find a lot of phoniness that people, now that they're Christians, somehow that they're above sin, and that's just not real. I mean, anybody that deals in the counseling world, and some of us like myself who don't, they just have a pair of eyes and can see people in ministries that are just as sinful as people outside of ministries. The Bible itself tells us that we all fall short in the eyes of God. So why are we trying to kid each other? Yeah. We all need to fess up, and we need accountability, and we need each other's help and encouragement and support. Like I just mentioned earlier in the program, I'm a happily married man, and yet I was smitten yesterday as a matter of fact, it was just yesterday that I was smitten by somebody. I was just like, took my breath away, and I'm thinking, man, you're too old for this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but I had those feelings anyway, and I couldn't deny it. And so now I've confessed it to you all and the other 35,000 people that are listening.
Well, you know, there, but for the grace of God go us. I mean, you're right. Everybody needs God's grace. Okay, I've been waiting to do this one because I just thought this is a winner of some sort. In researching information about restoring marriage, I ran across a book written by a rabbi. At first glance, the book promised increased intimacy and excitement in marriage. The first chapter was highlighted the appeal of illicit affairs to which married relationships cannot compare. It got worse. Quoting John Gottman, the author states that the commonly accepted premise of love and respect being the two most important ingredients in a happy marriage are absurd. The author states, and this is a quote, "Marriages that are based on trust become boring, routine, and predictable. Husbands who respect their wives usually treat them like their mothers or their sisters. They may look up to them, but they do not want to make love to them. Marriage should be based not on trust, but on tension, not on routine, but on raging emotion, not on respect, but on jealousy. Not on confidence, but on suspicion. And she has page 8 here. She never tells us the name of the book. She goes on to say, I knew that the advice was wrong and stupid, but the fact that my husband had gone outside our marriage, I have felt more like a mother or sister. It triggered a flood of very painful emotions in me. I expected a more biblical approach from a rabbi. I guess some people will do anything to sell a book. And, I'm sure that this was very unusual from a rabbi, but just the fact that there would be a book out there that would advocate those premises for a marriage is just, that's just nauseating to me.
Well, and it's just sad that someone, again, would be triggered because someone else in their own, well, actually, I don't know what he was thinking. I mean, that just seems, again, kind of crazy to me. But I think it's about time that we wrap up the program tonight. So I just want to give everybody a reminder that 3 weeks from now in Utah, we have the Utah EMS. That'll be on the 15th, 16th, and 17th of August. And if you're out on the western half of the United States and get over to Utah, we would absolutely love to have you. You can call us at area code 512-346-9299. You can go to our website at affairrecovery.com. That's affairrecovery.com. Or you can also come to the EMS in Austin. That'll actually be the 22nd, the 23rd, and the 24th of August. We have two in a row there, two weekends in a row. The 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, we would love to have you guys. So if you're in the midst of a crisis and you'd like some help, please go to our website, affairrecovery.com. That's affairrecovery.com, and we'll begin, I know we're saying this, the Harboring Hope launch. It's coming up. Hang in there. It's coming quickly. Hopefully in the next week you'll begin to see emails if you're on our email list.
Hey, you guys email us and let us know what you think of our new website, too.
Thanks, guys. Y'all have a great week.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us tonight and being a part of the newest addition to our services, Affair Recovery Radio, radio to the power of God. We'd like to invite you to go to our website, affairrecovery.com, and register for our free newsletter, as well as taking advantage of our free podcast. You will find that these resources are invaluable if you're trying to recover from some form of betrayal. We are here to help. We can also be contacted at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. And remember, there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Good night. God bless.
Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, I am the Lord, the God of all mankind. Is anything too hard for me?